The following is a presentation of the High Spot Podcast. Making their way to the ring, talking about the world of professional wrestling, the team of Jeff Martin and the trendsetter, Brian Perga, the Jersey Wrecking Crew.
And you're listening to the High Spot Podcast. We are the Jersey Wrecking Crew. My tag team partner, Jeff Martin. I am the trendsetter, Brian Perga. Thank you guys so much for listening to this week's episode. We've been on hiatus for a little bit. We are back again to enjoy the holiday season with you guys. Make sure you follow the High Spot Podcast on all social media out there, on Twitter, on Instagram, at High Spot Podcast. Make sure you check out all our shenanigans on our website, highspotpodcast.com. Make sure you also check out the show on all the places where you can get podcasts. Check us out on Apple Podcasts, iTunes. Leave a 5-star rating, leave a review, guys. Make sure you support this show and this episode specifically. Also, you can check us out on Spreaker, Shining Wizards Radio Network. You can also check us out on iHeartRadio, and make sure you also look at, subscribe, and like our YouTube channel at High Spot Podcast, all one word, where you see everything we've done in terms of conventions, interviews with talent, what I've done on my side here on my trip on adventures with the Trendsetter, all these things that you guys love and enjoy into the new decade. But with all that being said, we have lots to talk about, guys. We're recapping TLC. Final battle. We're recapping the NWA and what they've done, particularly to the end of this year. Now, could they possibly have Marty Scurll? Could they also, for the fact that we're dealing with Seth Rollins and a heel turn in the WWE, do we really care about that? I don't know. So much more to talk about. But before we get into all that, I must always ask this question, unfortunately. Jeff, how you doing?
Trendsetter, I feel like I'm just hindering the show. What a great introduction. So many topics to get into as we head towards the end of the year, Trendsetter, as we bid adieu to 2019. The year has gone by so fast. You're right, Trendsetter. We kind of went a little bit hiatus, but I think we're all well-rested as we head into the new year. But I'm doing well, Trendsetter. How are you? You sound more well-rested with that introduction.
Well, you know, I'm just running on fumes right now towards the end of the year, but excited for the fact that, you know, we have so much. We've encompassed a lot of it within the year 2019 in terms of everything in wrestling that we can possibly discuss or talk about. Now, just to look forward to what's going on in 2020, I'm exhausted just thinking about it, but enthusiastic because it's the end of the year. Everybody's excited. It's kind of a clean slate. So let's start doing it, man. Let's start talking about what's in terms of the future of not just wrestling, but for the High Spot Podcast.
I know. We've got a great end of the year award show for you guys next week as we close out 2019 and, you know, bring in 2020. But you're right, Trendsetter. Lots to get to. You know, TLC has probably been beaten to death by now. I thought it was just maybe a average pay-per-view network special. It's just like, why do we even have to have pay-per-views every single month, you know? There could be a little gap in between as you get ready for WrestleMania season. You said Survivor Series was the start of WrestleMania season. I think when I saw the promo for the Royal Rumble, that to me is where I start getting excited as the build-up to WrestleMania starts. But whatever you decide what the lead-in to WrestleMania is, I thought TLC, for being the last pay-per-view of the decade, and what a decade it's been pro wrestling, right? The last 2 years have been amazing, but I don't know. To me, where the WWE stands right now as far as their storylines heading into 2020, do you really think that they are on a positive? Because as we're talking today, it is the one-year anniversary of when Vince McMahon, Triple H, Stephanie, and Shane were out there in front of everybody, and they gave their speech, "We're going to give you what you want. We're going to showcase the superstars that you want to root for, that you want to pull for. We're going to change it up." And it was all for the fans. And now as we head almost now a year into that, Trendsetter, do you think that WWE has followed up with their with what they said a year ago?
Depends on who you ask. For asking me, the answer is clearly no. The WWE feels that they have. And this isn't the first time we've talked about it, Jeff. We've talked about it countless times over and over again. And it seems like, you know, it's repetitive. It's getting boring after a while. Because here's the thing, Jeff. We, for the longest time, always wanted an alternative. And we have that now with AEW. Not just with AEW, but with Ring of Honor, Impact. The list goes on and on. MLW, et cetera, New Japan Pro Wrestling. But I think what I'm starting to realize now in terms of everything that we're looking at and we're getting and obtaining, it seems like
as much as people trying to find their own identity, they're getting lost in the fact that they feel they need to be different and do something differently. When you look at the WWE product and answering the question you want, from them going out and realizing the audience was not happy with certain things that were going on, and then from to come out and make that speech and say, hey, we're finally admitting, we're opening the curtain, you guys now run, you guys are the authority. To me, it was a slap in the face when you look at the total outcome now, right now. I mean, a lot of people say to me and say to you, guys, just be fans, and we are fans. We will enjoy what we want to enjoy, and we will dislike what we want to dislike as fans. But at the same time, if we're talking about improving the span of professional wrestling and quote-unquote sports entertainment, you have to look at the product right now we have, and we spoke about this how many weeks ago. It just amazes me with the WWE and the amount of talent they have that they're stalling and failing so miserably at giving the audience what they want.
Yeah, and you're talking about an abundance of talent. Yes, they do. They have the deepest roster out of any organization, if you want to maybe put New Japan up there too with depth, but WWE has a vast amount of talent, and of course most of them are not going to be able to do what they want to do. There's going to be those people that they're going to push and elevate, and there's going to be people that are going to be stuck in the fold. If you talk about, for example, guys like that were released, like The Ascension and Sin Cara and Luke Harper, you know, a lot of people are like, okay, well, The Ascension, ever since they came to the main roster out of NXT, you're talking about one of the greatest NXT tag teams of all time. Mm-hmm. And then you're talking about Sin Cara, who, again, they pushed him for a little bit, and then they forgot about him, and then he was with the an array of horrible angles, and then obviously it led to nothing, and led him to be released. And Luke Harper probably maybe the WWE's biggest sin, as a lot of people felt that he could have been more useful than he was. He could have been more effective, and WWE chose not to push him. And I thought he was great with Eric Rowan. I thought that the Wyatt family was really good. They put on great matches, and Luke Harper is one of those talents that if you know exactly what to do with him, you can push him to a certain level. You can get a world title run out of him, and I think that once he leaves, I don't know exactly when he can go sign somewhere else, but I think he's going to be a guy that's going to really find a lot of success outside of WWE.
No, yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, in terms of the landscape out there, there's so much more out there now for performers or people to kind of hone their craft or just make a living off the independent scene. And if not, you have the companies like AEW, Ring of Honor, who desperately needs talent right now. And we can dive into that a little bit when we talk about Final Battle. And yeah, what I'm more annoyed with more than anything, and maybe annoyed isn't the right word, just maybe frustrated, is that, look, we've talked about the roster and the talent it has, right? But then you look at the newer stars they're trying to build up. Really easy. Last week we saw Deanna Purrazzo, compete against Asuka, and then we're gonna see Charlotte going up against Chelsea Green. Yeah. That's exciting. But then you look at the newer luchadors that are coming in from Sin Cara, and I keep messing up the guy's name. He sounds like Alberto Del Rio, but it's
Humberto Carrillo.
Humberto Carrillo. It's funny how it sounds alike, right?
Yeah, you're right, man. Yeah,
this is the version that they wanted.
Yeah.
But it's like you're trying to build this guy up, and all of a sudden it feels like when Vince has his moments where he doesn't like it anymore, he takes it away. My thing is, if you're trying to build their new stars, then the established ones have to give them the opportunity to get over. I know that's breaking kayfabe and using terminology there, but that's what frustrates the most. You're trying to build new stars, but at the same time, you're trying to keep your established ones established. And a perfect example to me, Jeff, is Seth Rollins. Turns heel now. And in my opinion, you and I talked about this too, and a lot of people have mentioned it, they like Seth as a heel. He plays a good bad guy rather than a good guy. But at this point right now, and I can't believe I'm saying this, because when we first saw the semblance of the Shield, and I'm like, that's Seth Rollins, man. He's got something. He's got that it factor. Along with Roman and Dean, they all had their moments. But Seth, he seemed like a star in the making. And now at this stage in his career, I could care less now that he turned heel.
Yeah, you know what the problem is, Trendsetter? Is like, I don't believe that, a lot of people talk, and you've heard the experts, the Hall of Famers talk about, the bad guy. And he needs to be that kind of person that,
you know, is not going to be cheered. Like that Baron Corbin, and I will say this for Baron Corbin, he has done a tremendous job of getting that heel heat, that original heel heat that you hear the Hall of Famer say back in the 60s, 70s, 80s, you pay to see to get his ass kicked. And that's what, for example, with the bad guy is, the bad guys are too cool right now. You know, they're doing the moves, they're doing like the high risk maneuvers, and, you know, they're looking for that pop. Because why? Because they also want to be able to sell their merchandise. They also want to be that hip, you know, being bad is cool, right?
Yeah.
So, but the only problem is they've lost the formula of how to make a successful baby face. And to me, it's not that easy of just putting a guy there, because the audience, now there's a difference between a live crowd, raw crowd, to a house show crowd, because those are the fans that are going to cheer there. They take their kids, and you know, the Roman Reigns and the Seth Rollins probably are cheered more than they are live on Raw or SmackDown or at a pay-per-view. The only issue here to me is that it's been a long time since a crowd has gotten behind somebody, like, in a natural babyface way. And I don't think WWE is that much to blame as far as, well, I mean, they are to blame, but, you know, part of it is, how do you make that babyface without the crowd turning on him? Because Roman Reigns pushed him to the moon. The crowd didn't feel like he was the right guy. Then he comes with the announcement that he has cancer. He becomes a sympathetic figure, and we put the wrestling aside, and we feel for the human being that is Roman Reigns. He comes back, we cheer him, and now problem is he's put in these angles where, you know, whether it's by his choice or WWE slowing down his push because they want to give him a lot too soon. And that's fine. But then you give the ball to Seth Rollins, who here's a guy that you think, okay, the fans aren't going to, shit on him, whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. And they do. The fans turn. And the only guy right now in the fold that I think that WWE wants to get behind and is the ultimate babyface that will never get that pushback from the fans is Daniel Bryan.
Yeah.
And then Daniel Bryan comes back in TLC, comes back even looking so much younger when he's looking at the Yes Movement. He's got the minus the beard and the long hair, kind of looks like the American Dragon, Bryan Danielson. And the crowd loves him. He is the ultimate babyface. Why does Daniel Bryan pull it off and a guy like Seth Rollins can't?
Well, I think you kind of answered your own question, though, because when you mentioned, like, what was the last time you could remember somebody so authentically connecting with the audience, and that was Bryan Danielson, during WrestleMania 30. Yeah. And then a lot of that happened, too, with the fact that CM Punk had left the company, and then, you know, they're waiting for what's the next guy in the position to do it, because currently at that time the storyline was Dave Bautista and Randy Orton. That wasn't going to work, and everybody was rooting for Daniel Bryan. He was the ultimate underdog. So I think a lot of that's relatable in terms of you're not looking for the next quote-unquote underdog, but, you know, like we say, the word authentic, it has to be genuine from the audience. But here's my biggest gripe, though, in answering your question, and I throw this into it, because, look, you talked about Roman Reigns, you talked about Seth in terms of how the fans have turned on them. And we know the reason why is because it seems nowadays whenever the WWE's behind anybody, and the machine's behind whatever force, whether the fans are rooting for this person to be successful or not, as soon as that initially happens, we're against them now. You know, perfect example, how many times were they rooting for Kofi Kingston? He had his WrestleMania moment, and then seemed now the company was positioning him in a way that didn't look like the underdog anymore, or the crowd didn't like, and they started kind of resenting him and looking towards the fact, all right, when's Kofi going to drop the title because it's getting boring and stale? So my thing for that is, what frustrates me from a fan standpoint is not necessarily, you know, who you're positioning, because let's be honest, the audience and the crowd, although they are the ultimate, you know, deciders of what works and what doesn't, what I get frustrated from a company standpoint is that when you looked at the guys like a John Cena, for example, or Roman Reigns, what I hated the most was when the WWE would go in, especially with Roman Reigns, and fully commit and then back off and change their mind, and then commit again and back off and change their mind. Do it the John Cena route, you know, and that's probably the formula right now, because you're not going to please everybody. You're going to get those boos because sometimes it's the cool thing to do sometimes. commit to it and stick with it. The mere fact that they did this experiment with Roman Reigns and it failed miserably because they kept going full force and then backing off and back and forth. And they
especially at WrestleMania.
And, yeah. they've done it with Seth Rollins, I believe, because, you know, the boos, he doesn't have to acknowledge them, but that they bring up to his attention and then he brings it up. And, you know, sometimes I feel Seth's his own worst enemy because as much as he says he's passionate by the company, he presents himself as a heel.
Do you think there's validity with... Is the issue with Seth that he's trying to push himself as the company's hero to the fans? Is that what the issue is? Because, you know, it is very poignant and very accurate in his speech where he talks about, you know, I tried to bring the title back to you guys. I did it for you guys to bring that, you know, your Universal Championship back to Raw and defend it. He did. Do you think that when he pushes himself as that hero, that's where the audience kind of pushes back? Or do you think it's just more like him being that company guy or him trying to be that guy, the face? Maybe he's trying too hard. Do you think it's fair for us to give him pushback like that when we see that he's actually trying to be hard? He's trying to be that guy. He's trying to be that Bret Hart, that fighting champion. You know, like
but there, here's the difference.
Where did it go wrong?
You mentioned Bret Hart. Bret Hart thought he was a hero, and he believed in everything he said. And we, as fans, believed in everything Bret Hart said on the microphone, whether it was in character or not, because a lot of it was truly Bret. With Seth, when he would go on the microphone, being beat up by Brock Lesnar, saying, I'm going to beat him, I'm going to defeat him, I'm going to bring the Universal title back to you, and do the hero element that you're talking about, it doesn't work. Not because Seth can't pull it off, but it doesn't seem authentic. And that's the biggest thing. It doesn't seem authentic. Is it fair? Is it fair for the fans to push back? Of course it's fair. You know, nothing's fair nowadays. You know, it's open season on anybody. Until you take it to a certain extreme where you start attacking people personally and start offending them that way, that's where I draw the line. But is it fair or not? The crowd can do whatever they want. They can boo whoever they want. You know, you were annoyed to the fact that during WrestleMania they're throwing beach balls and doing the wave, and you're like, that's so disrespectful. No, I'm sorry, Jeff. You know, these people paid money for their ticket. They can do whatever they want as long as it doesn't interfere with the match. And if the match was any good, then they wouldn't have. Because at the end of the day, if we're watching New Japan, and it's so funny, guys. Jeff was talking to me about New Japan and Wrestle Kingdom, which we'll talk about
too. I'm excited about that, man.
You're excited for it. You're looking forward to it. You know they're going to deliver. With these build-ups that WWE tries to do, and they do better jobs building things up in their video packages than the ultimate product you see out in the ring, that's where the difference lies.
Yeah.
For a guy like Seth Rollins, it's not authentic and it's not believable. And Stone Cold said it best. If I can't believe what you're saying to me over the microphone is real and coming from you, then I can't buy into you.
You know, thank God for the Wednesday Night Wars, or at least Wednesday nights, because you get AEW and they've been very consistent with the shows that they produce. I mean, it's been really, there really hasn't been like a show where you're like, oh, good God, how could, you know, I can't get through this, you know, and 2 hours is great. You go to NXT coming off of the Survivor Series. They've got a lot of momentum. Finn Balor's back. Keith Lee has become a star ever since Survivor Series. Rhea Ripley right now is tearing it up and looking forward to, you know, what happens with Shayna Baszler. That's going to be, you know, that where that goes, that's going to be interesting too. So, you know, thank God for Wednesday nights because, and again, I'm not here crapping on anything because, you know, to each their own. I think Cody Rhodes made a great point that he wants to be kind of a leader where AEW fans and WWE fans, like, don't attack each other. And I think that there needs to be some kind of rivalry between those fans, whether it's a friendly rivalry or not, but we don't even need to attack each other on social media, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm thankful for Wednesday nights, dude, because on Raw, you know, I just can't do it anymore. I can only watch like 5 minutes. Friday night SmackDown Trendsetter, you know, Friday nights is a day where you go out to unwind. It was a terrible time to put SmackDown on Friday nights back in the day, and now it's coming back. And I really don't know how Fox is, you know, dealing with the ratings, because to me, SmackDown should be all hands on deck. I said it tons of times before. Everybody should be available because you need to see guys like Seth Rollins. You need to see the full roster on SmackDown because you are not on cable TV. You're on a network. You are going across the U.S. and worldwide. So you need to have the faces there. So it just, to me, Friday night, I can't even do a trendsetter because I need to catch up. I'd rather go to their YouTube, get caught up, you know, in 15 minutes of what their whole shows are about. Mm-hmm. And I just, for some reason, cannot find myself you know, getting involved for those Raw and SmackDowns. So the point, Trendsetter, is I talked to you about New Japan and Wrestle Kingdom. It's going to be a two-night event. If you take a look at the card, it is absolutely stacked, and you're going to see great wrestling. You're going to see Will Ospreay. You're going to see Jericho and Tanahashi. You know, and of course you're going to see the first ever double champion crowned, because Wrestle Kingdom is now two nights, and you've got great wrestlers like Jay White, Naito, Ibushi, and of course Okada. I mean, that's going to be tremendous, and it's going to be like at 4 in the morning, 5 in the morning, but I'm still going to watch it. Trendsetter,
you're probably not going to get up at that time.
No, but I will try my effort to stay there live. But the issue is, Trendsetter, when we go to Tampa this year, when we go, it's going to feel like not a vacation or a trip. It's just going to be like, oh, man. Although, you never know what's going to happen with WWE. You might get CM Punk versus Seth Rollins. And then I may be okay, you know, whatever. But right now, as I get ready for that WrestleMania buildup, it's not the same. It's just not. I just don't feel it being the same.
No, it's not the same. And the mere fact that the way how enthusiastically you spoke about New Japan Pro Wrestling and Wrestle Kingdom now being two nights and crowning the first ever double champion that on the second night, which is exciting and something new for New Japan Pro Wrestling. So kudos to them for doing that. You just said if we get a CM Punk and Seth Rollins match, now you're kind of sold on it. Well, I'm sorry, I'm not. You know, watching Raw for me now sometimes actually starts making me dislike watching the product, not just WWE, but I'm like, all right, if I'm seeing this for 3 hours and seeing what they're putting out still after, you know, you talked about that speech that the McMahons and Triple H went out to tell the public, and this is still what you're putting out with the commentating team and the way they're unable to tell stories and elaborate emotions for us via television to see. And then you look at the visual of it, you know, they do a great job on their camera angles, but you can see that stuff is being black tarred on top. The arenas aren't as full as they used to be. You know, it's disheartening for me to watch. And really doesn't make me enthusiastic for WrestleMania coming up.
We need to stop, too, and hopefully this ends in 2020. We got to stop with the taking pictures of, like, Ring of Honor and showing there's only, you know, five people in there. You know what it is? Because, you know, it just shows you, then why are you there? You know, you're there because you want to see good wrestling. I don't want, you know, you can do whatever you want. You can pay your ticket, whatever like that. But, you know, you're gonna crap on an event that you're at, and you're going to go, like, sheesh. And then, so why are you there? You're there to see the wrestling, right? But then you want to expose to everybody just how bad the crowd is. They're doing it with AEW. They're showing, you know, even WWE when they do the house shows or when it's tarped up, you know, you see that, you know, that there aren't people. You go to the hard cam side, there's no, you know, on the opposite end, there's nobody there. Same thing with Final Battle. I mean, that was, to me, you had a great wrestling event. You know, there were good matches on there. And congratulations to PCO on winning the Ring of Honor Championship. But, you know, why would you want to shit on something that you're actually there at? It just, to me, makes no sense.
No, you're right. I agree to you to a certain point. I mean, but perception is reality. Mm-hmm. You know, I think for the longest time, I can't speak for you, but as a fan, I hate being shown. Now, don't get me wrong. I used to love as a kid watching magic tricks, and the illusion was enjoyable. I didn't want to see how the trick was done, how the illusion was presented, because I felt if it did, it would ruin it for me. But at the same time, too, don't present me chicken shit and think it's chicken salad in a sense, you know. And so when you see the elaborateness of how things are set up, but then you see the all-round reality of the situation, it is what it is, you know. And you know, when you see the blacked out, it's not a great sight to see. It's disappointing when you look at an event like Final Battle, and it's their biggest one of the year. It's their WrestleMania in a sense. And you see the building not even close to half full. It concerns me more. And and to me, I want it to be more, believe it or not, a reminder to say, hey, listen, guys, you need to get your stuff together.
Yeah.
Because you know what? The crowd is speaking here. There's only so much you can do to showcase that there isn't an issue when there really is. So to me, that's my biggest gripe. When you try to cover it up and not show it, is you're masking the fact that there is a problem. It's best that you address it, showcase it, acknowledge it, and let's do better here. I mean, because that's what the show's all about. Yeah. That's what you and I have always been since the start of the show, when we go to the crowds and we see the enthusiasm, when we went to go see All In, and then we went to go see All Out, and then we went
even
to
the final Ring of Honor in Madison Square Garden. Yeah. The electricity was there.
Supercard of Honor. It was amazing. Yeah. And to me, as you want to continually have that happen, when you don't see it and you see it on social media, it's disheartening. But to me, it should be motivation. The company's like, listen, the audience is seeing this. They're showing other people. We have to do something better here.
All right, Jensen, real quick, TLC, of course, you said you're going to recap it, but, you know, again, everyone beats us to death. What did you take out of it? If there's one thing heading into, like I said, the upcoming shows and just heading to the Royal Rumble, you know, just one thing that you got out of the Royal Rumble, was it Daniel Bryan? Was it The Miz losing so fast?
Rumble or TLC you're talking about?
Oh, I'm talking about TLC. We're heading into the Royal Rumble. Is there anything that stuck out to you about TLC?
Wow, that is definitely a tough one, man, because it's really hard to find anything that I found was like something to look forward to. But I guess it's basically the popular one was, you know, Daniel Bryan coming back, but now as, you know, the version that we saw when he first started with WWE, you know, babyface look and stuff like that, will that make it more appealing? I guess it's something different than, you know, when we talk about pro wrestling, we talk about people that have that connection with the audience. It's always great to reinvent yourself. I think Daniel Bryan did that a lot with the look he had, and then he kind of did away with the Yes movement. Now he's coming back and doing it again, but now it's a freshly clean cut Daniel Bryan.
Yeah.
It's not the beard again, so I guess you don't have to deal with the confusion of some of the audience might think, well, this guy's a beard and he's wavy and now he's good. What's going on? So I guess the perception there works. But, looking forward to what Daniel Bryan's going to do now because, you know, there's been some – to me, in terms of disappointing storylines that we've seen across our time watching pro wrestling, especially when we've looked at Daniel Bryan prior to him retiring and dealing with the injuries, was like – there's a great story to be told there with the whole Bray Wyatt scenario. And it got cut short for whatever reason. And then they never went back to it. Daniel Bryan had to deal with injuries and retired. Now they have the ability to kind of, you know, having a second chance to resurrect it. Now I'm kind of curious to see what direction they're going to go. Because they've done all this time building up The Fiend, building up the Bray Wyatt now. He is the Universal Champion. And, you know, could this be Daniel Bryan's last go to be a main eventer again? You know, that's the interesting concept I'm looking at.
Yeah, while you take that, I will take the fact that the...
Don't say Lionel Russo.
No.
Swear I'll slap you in the face.
No, I we talked in the pre-production, and, you know, you clearly want to avoid that subject.
I know, but knowing you, you'd probably bring it up just to be that stickler.
I wouldn't do that. What I want to talk about is the women's tag team title match, the ladder match towards the end, and, you know, glad Kairi Sane is all right.
Botchamania?
Yeah, there are some missed spots, but... At the end of the day, here's the thing where we're talking about whether things are being forced, and this whole women's revolution has been, you know, tremendous. One of the main stories of 2019 is the women main evented WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. But do you think the women need to main event all the matches? You know, Paige went on recently and said how, you know, it's shit that there's no women's pay-per-view, where she should be honest with herself and be like, listen, Ronda Rousey was the main reason why that whole Evolution pay-per-view even took place to begin with. I'm sorry, the man is not going to draw me to watch whole pay-per-views surrounded around her, even though she had a tremendous year. Charlotte, the same thing. Sasha Banks, Bayley. There's not that dynamic, that polarizing figure to build a whole pay-per-view around like a Ronda Rousey. Now, whether she returns for the Rumble or she comes back for WrestleMania, we'll see that. But, you know, I just feel like, for example, like the Baszler, Bayley, and Becky Lynch match Survivor Series, it could have gone on, you know, somewhere in the middle, but they just take it, you know, to the main event. And so now they take this matchup here, and, you know, great showing for Asuka. But again, was it worthy to be the main event? If you look at all those matches, it's really tough to pick one main event because The Miz got squashed so much. But, again, here's the thing, like, are the women being just pushed too much where the fans are going to have pushback on it?
I think they're being put in position right now where it's like, yes, they're being put in the position because it's the popular thing for the company to do. And I think what's going on right now is a lot of stuff is running stale, in my opinion, with the women's division. What was so cool about the emergence of Becky, her turning heel, going back to babyface, because she had finally kind of showcased her real self. And then, you know, and nobody will ever forget the classic, you know, Stone Cold moment,
yeah,
being punched in the face by Nia Jax and standing on in the audience with a bloody face as they're building up the storyline towards Ronda Rousey, which is why they were the main event, her, Charlotte, and Ronda for WrestleMania. But now I just think right now it's running stale because, okay, Becky Lynch, we know who she is. This is her same old shtick. Charlotte Flair, to me, as talented as she is, I think she's at a point right now where she's in limbo, and to me, I wouldn't say dire, but in need of a repackaging, or not necessarily have to change anything, but like there's some issue when
you give her the title multiple times, and she's had, you know, it's like, all right, does she really need this title anymore?
Yeah. Like, I'm looking for the queen, and I haven't seen the queen yet. Sasha Banks, after months of complaining, is now in the spot she's in, and we barely know she's on the show.
And now she's in Bayley's shadow.
Bayley has this new look, new attitude, and honestly, it was cool for the first couple weeks, but they've done nothing with it, and nothing's changed. Yeah. So I don't know what they're trying to promote and build up the tag team division, which, okay, I guess is a cool idea.
But they didn't give a crap about it for the longest time.
Yeah, and so that's where it feels like they're just trying to pull strings right now. And it's really surprising for the fact they have all these things pre-planned, or they supposedly do, and the creative process right now is kind of stalling the fact that here you have a lot of talented women currently in your roster, the four horsewomen, the original four horsewomen, and Sasha, Bayley, Charlotte, and Becky, which you always wanted to build and solidify that division of the women. And I'm more interested now in the people underneath, like, for example, in NXT and what they're trying to do, because right now, currently what you've done with those four, you've kind of worn it out, and it's kind of old news right now. And like I said, it's run its course and it's stale. So I think they're doing it more for sentimental reasons, for nostalgia factor. But ultimately, yeah, I think they're really pushing this more, which is why the crowd's starting to get resentment towards it.
And another issue, too, well, we won't say everybody, but there is some kind of pushback from a lot of people about this, too. But another thing, too, there's too many firsts. WWE's trying to take care of too many firsts in the women's division, like in 1 year. You can't do that, man. It has to be, like you said, authentic. It needs to just, you know, be organic. You can't push everything being the first thing in 1 year, you know what I mean? You got to, like, leave it, spread it out, and put it there for, like, you know, 1 year or 2 years. Because if we see everything in 1 year, then, I mean, you know, again, we're going to be like, okay, been there, seen that, okay, you know, whatever. It's less special.
I think that's what happens from a company standpoint, though. When you see the momentum of a first-time-ever type of thing, you're like, oh, let's do it again, and let's do it again, and let's do it again. And eventually you run out of firsts.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, that's on TLC. Hopefully, when we head into Royal Rumble season now, you know, we get excited now for WrestleMania 2, you know, coming up eventually. And then,
WrestleMania as well, not WrestleMania 2.
No, not WrestleMania 2. I mean, yeah. Well, WrestleMania, oh, and yeah, the T-O-O is what I meant, trendsetter. Oh, yeah. And so, yeah, Ring of Honor, you know, again, congratulations to PCO, 52 years old. And he is a world champion. You know, back in the day, we'd say that 52 was too old, but now 52 is like the new 42 now. Seems like, you know, PCO is in tremendous shape, probably the best shape of his life. And he had a tremendous match with Roosh. And the rematch is set for next month. So any rumors that Roosh was leaving, you can rest assured that the rematch will happen next month. And PCO is your new world champion. Congratulations to him. Congratulations to Jay Lethal and Jonathan Gresham, new tag team champions as well. I think it was a really good show. And I would hope that Ring of Honor has had a lot of black eyes heading towards the end of the year, Trendsetter. I mean, if they were a boxer, you swear they'd be down for the count. But they still have that pulse with them. And you hope that Ring of Honor in 2020 can get back to what it's been, and that is not only great wrestling, which it shows, but just reputable as far as how they treat their talent.
Yeah, I think that's been the biggest gripe right now when you look at Ring of Honor in terms of, first of all, the talent they have right now. It's a good set of talent right now, but you're really looking at the core roster, and it's not that deep. And the thing is as much as I love, you know, what happened with Jay Lethal, you know, the Greshams are the future. You really have to look towards, I mean, I'm so happy for PCO, but, you know, he look at the stage in his career. Again, extremely happy for him, but we have to start working on building newer stars. It's not an easy thing. There is no formula for it. I get it. I'm not going to be acting like one of those people like, I know what I'm talking about. Oh, you should be building new stars. Well, where? But I think right now Ring of Honor finds themselves in a pretty interesting situation.
It's an uphill battle.
Where, yeah, after losing so much momentum from losing their stars, and we'd spoken about before, the Bullet Club, the Elite, etc., and now trying to build it right now with this, and then possibly, Marty Scurll is no longer with the company. His contract expired. He signed an extension to do Final Battle.
Yeah, he's got us in limbo, trendsetter.
Don't know what's going on right now, but here's the thing. It's like, if you let that ship sail, if it is, it's already gone and off the docks, and it's gone, and you've done that, then it's a huge uphill climb. But again, good showing for Final Battle. I think there's just so much more that Ring of Honor still needs to do, and it's amazing. It seems like just yesterday we were talking about the fact that they're
so MSG
and the build up to it, and look towards the future, and it seems like little by little it's been dwindling down to a certain point. So, you know, kudos to the great show. I wish a lot more people had the ability to watch it. So to me, what I look forward to in 2020
it wasn't
is
in New York either, man. It was at
in Baltimore.
The UMBC Center is beautiful. It's a great place. We were there last year. I think we went to see an event there too. So I mean, but yeah, it's just weird that usually it's here at the Manhattan Center, Hammerstein Ballroom. But yeah, they have an uphill battle, Trent Center. And as far as Marty Scurll, you know, shows up on NWA Into the Fire, their pay per view. He's got his eyes set on the 10 pounds of gold. So a lot of people thought that, and eventually it might be that he'll go to AEW and, you know, go there with to be with his friends. But for now, Marty Scurll is talked about because he didn't appear in where everyone thought he was going to do. He appears in NWA. He made his intentions known that he is, again, like after that 10 pounds of gold of the NWA Championship, he wants to be a NWA World Champion, and reinvigorated by working for NWA. So I don't know what the book is, whether it's closed on Ring of Honor because he is a leader of Villain Enterprises, so we'll see what happens there. But for now, Marty Scurll's talked about and being talked about because he didn't go to AEW. He went with NWA. So this is good for Marty. I really think it gets people talking because it would be too predictable. Oh, okay, he shows up on Dynamite, whatever. He changes the questions when we think we have all the answers figured out. So good for Marty, and it was really surprising to see him on NWA.
I wasn't surprised. I really wasn't. You know why? Because when you think you know what's going to happen, like you said, Marty is aware of these things. And I think he's a huge student of the game in terms that, you know, a lot of people said, oh, he's staying in Ring of Honor. Why isn't he joining his friends in AEW? To me, that would be the easy thing to do. And ultimately, I think, in terms of money standpoint, in terms of business, it makes sense eventually for him to do that, because when you look at what's going on and how they're trying to build the inner circle in AEW, and they always have the ability of that potential battle between the actual elite versus the inner circle, and that's money right there for AEW. I think eventually it will happen, but I applauded Marty so much for taking a risk and taking a book out of, you know, a chapter out of Cody's book, in a sense. And he wasn't the first one to do it, but ultimately what Marty did was he betted on himself. He developed Villain Enterprises. He did the best he could with it. I still to this day don't know why he didn't get the title. I remember talking to the Wee Barber about this, and he was like, well, his contract was short. Yeah, but here's the thing. Even if his contract was short, I, from a company standpoint, would still put the title on him, because, you know, at the moment he drops in his final match at Final Battle, that title and the individual that beats Marty is going to be so much more valuable.
Yeah.
And at the same time, not only does that happen, but Marty finally his stock rises as well as a champion finally. But again, it didn't happen. Now he has the ability to go for the gold in the NWA, and what a goal, the world title of world titles, basically the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. That would be an amazing thing. But like I said before, it's best because Marty has done it the right way. He's building himself his own brand.
Yes.
He's creating his own identity. He doesn't want to be related. You know, it's cool to be related with the Elite, but he doesn't want that to be his only name. He is his own individual. He's not just a funny guy, though. We miss him on being the Elite, the videos on YouTube. He was hilarious in those.
Oh, God, do we miss him.
Marty, please come back one day, please, very soon. But he's doing it on his own right now, and he's building his own name. So when the day does come for him to maybe make the jump and go to AEW, if that does happen, he's going to be a bigger star than ever.
And enjoy the ride, guys. Like, what is the hurry to put him in AEW? Enjoy what he's doing now. And, Trent, I got to give kudos to the NWA, because when Billy Corgan took it over, okay, you were really thinking, I was thinking at least, okay, so this one guy is going to be the traveling champion, and Nick Aldis, and, you know, okay, it's cool.
They had to go through their growing pains as well.
But, man, dude, one-hour show, studio wrestling, I never really caught on or was a fan of that. I remember watching sometimes the clips of, you know, Ric Flair doing his promos, and then you know they would go out and wrestle on the stage over there.
Yeah.
And, you know, WCW kind of did a little bit when they were in Disney for a little bit in Orlando at that, because it was like a stage and a little studio too. But, you know, man, it works. And now you got Stu Bennett there who's doing commentary, who's
not just
really
it
good.
Works, but it's something different though. Yeah, we haven't seen it. It's old school.
And it's got the retro, and they're bringing back the television championship, the NWA title.
Yeah, I saw that.
They're having another pay-per-view called Hard Times on January 24th. The NWA and what Billy Corgan has done is build it slowly but very smart. And with Dave Lagana, who is doing the the build up with the 10 pounds of gold, and then also doing all the videos, you know, now you have a very strong roster. You know, you got guys like Ken Anderson, Eli Drake, you got Aaron Stevens, you got Colt Cabana. You've got those kind of guys there, James Storm. And also now, and you're injecting Marty Scurll in there, studio wrestling, you got to me one of the must-see females on there in Camille, who's definitely must-see. Wow, and Melina just signed too. You got, everything, Tasha Steeles is there now. Allison Kay, you know, kudos to Billy Corgan, and that's definitely one of the top stories in 2019.
Yeah, it's one of the top stories, but it's not really talked about a lot, because everybody talks about WWE, everybody's talking about AEW. Yeah. That's the sexy thing, that's the romantic thing to talk about. But yeah, the uprising of the NWA from the ashes of what it once was to now, it's an amazing story, and think right
relevant.
Now it's clearly not getting the coverage it deserves. But I think eventually that will change. And you know, like I said, they're slowly building it up, but they're doing it the right way, because with certain things, you don't rush it.
No.
You're going to go through your ups and downs. You're going to go through the trials and tribulations with what they did. But again, you stick with people that are committed to it, and it's going to work. And I think that's what's going on right now. It's the element right now of, you know, we joke about this, Jeff and I, because when you really look, for example, Jeff and I are fans of movies, but it's been the longest time since we've gone to a movie theater, because Jeff's so cheap, he won't take me out and wine and dine
me. We haven't even seen the Joker yet, Trendsetter.
Yes. Oh, God damn it. But I heard mixed reviews on that one, but I definitely want to see it. But with that, like, it seems like everybody's recreating stuff from the past. How many movies are being repackaged again, right?
Yeah.
And the same thing with this. They're bringing old school back to this generation.
And they're making it cool?
Now they're making it cool. As you know, the great Rowdy Roddy Piper once said, old school is cool nowadays, because it's something that people don't really take time. Everybody's so quick to the instant gratification. No, this takes time. You're going to enjoy it for what it is. It's that close, intimate setting, and it works.
Yeah, it really does work.
It still works.
Yeah, it really does work. And again, they're having their pay-per-view on the 24th of January 2020, Trendsetter, already. Talking about 2020, of course, January 12th, Trendsetter, Tessa Blanchard challenges for the Impact World Championship against Sami Callihan. Tessa Blanchard will be heavily involved in her End of the Year award show next week. Sami Callihan has had a tremendous 2019, Trendsetter. Can't take it away from him winning the World Championship, but now you get to the point where is it going to get people talking, do you think, in a positive way or a negative way about having an intergender matchup for the world title? Because this will be the first time, I believe, that you're going to have a woman vie for a men's championship. Do you think this has a precedent? Is this going to be a negative? Or do you think that people talking about it now can only be positive for Impact Wrestling?
I think you're going to have both. You're going to have people for it, and you're going to have, obviously, the old school mentality of saying this should not be happening. This is isn't believable. This is, you know, it's an embarrassment. Not because it's a male versus female, but it's not real. It's not reality, because when you look at let's say UFC, you would never see a man face a woman or fight a woman in the octagon. It doesn't work. Why does it work in wrestling? Well, because guys, in wrestling, it's all make believe.
You're telling me it's predetermined?
not just predetermined, but it's all a story. And, you know, it's believable. And, you know, this isn't the first time we've discussed this, and we've spoken to several talent, especially a female talent of intergender wrestling, how they enjoy it, and both the men and female enjoy it, and the crowd really gets into it. So this is going to be a huge step, and a huge risk also, too. I don't think there's going to be backlash from it, but I think it's a risk, because we've already seen it with Tess and Brian Cage when they wrestled Wrestle Circus.
Yeah, that's a popular one.
Sammy and Tessa Blanchard faced each other as well in a no disqualification match.
Yeah.
So it's not the first time they'll be in the ring together. But I think for this moment, it's going to be interesting where it goes. It can go either way. It really can. We'll talk more about it the closer it approaches, but. Ultimately, I feel you're going to get both. But I think right now, the ability, the fact that people are discussing it, they're openly talking about it, they're not just immediately bashing it, mm-hmm. I think it's a step in the right direction.
Like you said before, a long time ago, wrestling is like, you know, Baskin Robbins. You got all the flavors.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether you like it or not, intergender wrestling is a part of that where you go to see. And I know shows around here have built their cards just on intergender wrestling. A la like a Battle Club Pro, and they continue to do that. And, you know, to me, it's like oversaturation sometimes. But again, it is a part of wrestling now that as you head into 2020 and, you know, people continue to break barriers, you know, you're going to see more of it. Now, whether you're a fan of it or not, I think any kind of talk for Impact Wrestling is going to be good. And you better believe that they're going to put on a good show with Tessa Blanchard and Sam Callahan on January 12th. And kudos to MLW. Had the MLW Opera Cup here in the Melrose Ballroom. Another great show by MLW. You know, they're hiring Krista Joseph. He's back now from Lucha Underground. He used to be a writer for WWE. He's now working with Court Bauer. They have tremendous announcements coming up. Filthy Tom Lawler re-signs with the company. You know, you got teams like the Von Erichs, you know, Brian Pillman Jr., MJF, Hammerstone, Alexander Hammerstone. It's just amazing. You don't think, like, you know, how many wrestlers are there, you know what I mean, around the world, but it just shows you that MLW also has a talented roster.
Yeah, we've talked about I don't think we've talked about this amongst ourselves. Mm-hmm. We haven't really spoken about it on the show.
Yeah.
But yeah, look at that roster, too, and you know, just, I would compare it to, I guess, to a certain degree, the NWA is doing. MLW is obviously completely different from NWA, so don't get the two confused, guys, that I'm saying that they're very similar. But the similarity lies in the fact that when you look at MLW and what they've done from a production standpoint, what they've done from storyline standpoint, what they've done to actually listen to their audience and actually create that ability for the talent to do, as we've spoken to several people, whether it be promoters, writers for wrestling, and talent themselves, the ability to have creative control and to have characters, you know, either sink or swim. And MLW has shown the fact that their roster, it's a really nice roster if you really look at it. And a lot of the people I don't think really have been showcased still yet to be, but the potential of my God, this is pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah.
What could be is there. And that element's there. And I think a lot of the crowds has that. So that's why you see the enthusiasm. So whenever MLW holds an event or they're holding a pay-per-view, it's exciting because you're like, wow, what's going to happen next? It's that new feeling, new mentality. It's like when you take the new sneaker out of the box.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, ooh, it smells fresh. I can't wait to put this on.
And I think High Spot Podcast needs to be more of a figure in MLW. And I think that we'll start attending. You know, I want to see my first MLW show at the Melrose Ballroom soon, so we're definitely going to make that a New Year's resolution in 2020. Trendsetter, man, what a week Trendsetter has been here on the High Spot Podcast. We want to thank Collar and Elbow for sponsoring today's episode. It is an apparel brand founded by Al Snow, mixing a wrestling passion with street fashion. Catch the winter line headed your way. You got long sleeve t-shirts and hoodies. Go to collarandelbowbrand.com and save 10% on your entire online purchase. Just enter promo code HighSpotPodcast, all in caps. Next week, Trendsetter, it all comes down to the High Spot Podcast End of the Year Award. You got your Match of the Year, Feud of the Year, Best Male Wrestler of the Year, Female Wrestler of the Year, Jersey Event of the Year, our top 10 wrestlers of 2019. It's going to be a tremendous show. We get to play, we get to hand out a lot of awards next week. So I'm looking forward to that, Trendsetter. You getting ready to get your tux on and start handing out some awards. What category are you most looking forward to talking about and analyzing next week?
That's a tough one, but I would have to say it's always, to me, the most exciting thing to talk about would always be because everybody has, with all the categories, everybody's going to have their own interpretation and their own mindset and reasoning behind things. But I love when we always talk about the match of the year. The match of the year is always huge because to me it's like whether it happens from January of that year, from the very beginning to the
Wrestle
very
Kingdom,
end.
Let's be honest, Wrestle Kingdom is the standard bearer now because you're thinking, okay, maybe February there'll be a match. No, it gets started on the 4th and the 5th, Wrestle Kingdom. It's right there. There's match of the year matches right there.
It's true.
Candidates.
And I really feel nowadays, especially this year and last year as well, that I don't know if it's intentional from the talent, because I'm sure if you ask them, they're like, no, that's the last thing we think about. But I really feel like most people talk about WrestleMania, right? And you want to steal the show. Everybody's main thing is they want to be that one match that steals the show. And if we went through every WrestleMania, we probably have our own opinions of, oh, this match is the one that steals the show, et cetera, et cetera. I feel, as a fan standpoint, I think a lot of what happens when the year begins and then we lead towards the end of the year, people are like, I want to have the match of the year. I want to make sure that mine lasts the test of the whole year, because that means that I've accomplished my goal. Because ultimately, as from a former standpoint, I feel you want to obviously give the fans their money's worth. You want to hone your craft and face the very best, but you want to leave that ultimate memory of, you know, when you think of 2018, what was that one match in 2018 that like just topped it all? Same thing we'll be talking about. What was that one match in 2019? In regards of everything we've seen, we still go back to you like, man, that was awesome. That was an awesome match.
Oh, I think, man, that's so many,
the feeling,
man,
people have sometimes. It's hard. Guys, it's going to be impossible for Jeff and I to put everything on there, so we'll do our best. But at the same time, a few things will be left out. But again, we try to be as fair as we possibly can.
But I will say this, which is there something you left out. You talked about the match of the year, right? I want to go out there. But also, the requisites of a match of the year not only has to be great action in the ring, but you know what? It has to tug at your heart a little bit. And I think
emotional investment.
Emotional investment into it, too, as well. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens here, who wins that match of the year. I know you guys have your list, so we'll let you guys interact with us, and we'll make sure we listen to you guys from the crew and get your thoughts on it too on bodyslam.net. But it's going to be great, and then we have our top 15 stories too from 2019 as well. So it's going to be a fully loaded show, Trendsetter, and I feel so bad for you, man. There's going to be a lot of editing and production for you for that end of the year award show. But again, Trendsetter, if anyone deserves it, it's you. And also want to wish you a happy birthday, Trendsetter. Very happy that you're part of the show and a vital key. And man, another year older, Trendsetter, but glad to have you around. And you know, we love you, man. Happy birthday.
Thanks. I appreciate that. I appreciate the members of the crew here, and looking forward to next week as we end the year the way it is. And it wouldn't have been the end of the year if it wasn't more work for me to do. So something is never end. I guess that won't be a New Year's resolution to do less work in 2020. I guess it's just going to be more work. But again, I won't have any other way because, again, it's for you guys, the crew, because we enjoy doing it. And you guys have been listening to the High Spot Podcast. Make sure you catch us on our social media on Twitter and Instagram at High Spot Podcast. Check out all our shenanigans and what's up to date with the Jersey Dragon crew on our website, highspotpodcast.com. We're part of bodyslam.net. Make sure you check them out as well. So great to be on their platform. Also, check us out on everywhere you can find podcasts available. Check us out. You can check us out on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Spreaker, just to name a few, iHeartRadio. Yep. You know, just make sure you leave a comment and review. Show your support. Go to, Pro Wrestling Tees. If you want to be a part of the crew, go in there. Buy a shirt, guys. Be a member. Post it on social media. We will repost it on our Instagram and Twitter page as well to showcase the fact that we love your support, your whole support since we've started this, and definitely the support for the entire year. So for Jeff Martin, my tag team partner, I am the trendsetter, Brian Berger. We are the Jersey Record, and you guys have been listening to the High Spot Podcast. And remember, guys, as we lead towards the end of next week, we will talk about the end of the year awards and make sure that 2019, we close that chapter in the decade, make sure we look forward to a new decade. Always remember one thing and one thing only. If you don't remember anything from this show, always remember that we do this for one reason and one reason only. We do this for you, the crew.